This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show my podcast partner, Galactic Space Geek, Jeff Gagne!
Hello, Jennifer, and hello, listeners. Boy, do we have an exciting episode coming up today. We are going to be talking to somebody who has done something so many times that I think a whole bunch of us either want to do or a lot of us might be too scared to try.
Ooh, I am very curious about this one. What problem are we solving today?
Is it easy to land a helicopter on a ship?
Is it easy to land a helicopter on a ship? Now, my answer is no, but I can't wait to find out. So who's our guest today, Jeff?
Agree with you. This is going to be great. Our guest today is the fantastic Elizabeth Booker, former Coast Guard helicopter pilot, now young adult fiction writer, and owner of Literary Aviatrix.
Oh, that sounds fun. Welcome to the show, Liz.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, we are thrilled to have you. I'm so excited we get to talk about women in aviation. So let's just start right there. Tell us, what do you fly? We said you're a pilot. What do you fly?
Two of my favorite topics, women in aviation. Well, I spent 28 years in the United States Coast Guard. During that time, I learned with the U.S. Navy in Pensacola how to fly. I started off on an airplane, and that we call those fixed wing. And then I went to helicopters, which we call rotary wing. And so the majority of my flying time is in rotary wing aircraft. But because I learned on both, now that I'm retired, I fly recreationally in airplanes, in fixed wing planes.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
I just fly recreationally. Did everybody catch that? Now that she's retired, what she does for fun is not gardening. Flies recreationally.
Or running or jogging or, you know, swimming.
So I do have to ask.
Do that too. I do all those things too.
Okay. I do have to ask, now that you're retired with those fixed wing, and we'll get back to the career. We know you live in Florida. Do you have like a special place over Florida that you'd like to fly for, some place that you can look around?
Oh my goodness. I'm sorry, Florida, but well, I do love flying over the Keys, but I have not done that since I retired. I did that a lot when I was flying for the Coast Guard. Okay. So I love the crystal clear water and being able to see all the sharks out there, which is really cool. And there are a lot of them, but you know, one of the things that is really hard to adjust to is having to pay to fly, because I used to get paid to do it.
Yes.
And I also got to fly in some really amazing places in terms of scenery, like around San Francisco and Los Angeles. So, and all over the Caribbean, around Haiti and Cuba. So Florida leaves a little bit to be desired in terms of terrain.
Okay.
But, and it's very busy airspace, but I'm just making do.
Yeah.
Okay.
So tell us about flying a helicopter. I have done it once in my life for, I don't know, probably 5 minutes. As a midshipman at the Naval Academy, you get to go to Pensacola for a week. And they put us in the T-34s and tried to make us sick. That was lovely. The planes, the airplanes, but the helicopter, I had 5 minutes of holding the controls and I was hooked. Unfortunately, I have like some of the worst eyesight on the planet. So they were like, this woman's never going to be able to fly a plane. But tell us about flying a helicopter. How cool is that?
Well, before I tell you that, I just want to say that the rules have changed over the years. So any young people listening who are like, oh no, I wear glasses and have terrible eyesight too, the services have now started accepting certain kinds of surgery to correct vision so that you can be a pilot in the military. That was a really big deal back in the day, but it has changed a lot. So just
thank you for pointing that out.
That's so cool. Great news.
I know. So great. It opened the doors to lots of very capable pilots.
Yes.
So flying a helicopter is awesome because you can do things in a helicopter that you cannot do in a plane. It also has limitations that planes don't have, which I'll be happy to talk about. But the coolest things I think that the helicopter can do are hover and hoist. And you can even fly sideways and backwards in a helicopter, which you cannot do in an airplane for aerodynamic reasons. And so the Coast Guard, you know, uses these aircraft. One of the primary missions, the Coast Guard has 11 statutory missions, but one of the ones that is really exciting and is certainly very satisfying is search and rescue, which is going out and helping people who get in trouble out on the water. And so while the airplanes can search, they can't rescue. And so that was very exciting to be able to be a part of helping people who may not have survived if we didn't come along in our aircraft and hover over them and hoist them up and take them to medical care that they needed.
Yes, absolutely.
That is a very cool mission.
Yeah.
In the middle of that answer, you mentioned some limitations of a helicopter that a fixed wing aircraft doesn't have. What are some of those?
Well, I think it's important first to have just a very basic understanding of aerodynamics, which refers to basically the shape of the craft that's moving through the air.
Right.
And there are four forces that we like to talk about when we talk about aerodynamics. They are the opposing forces of lift and gravity. Yep. So everybody knows that gravity holds us down on the earth, and to get off of it, you need to be able to create lift.
Yes.
And the other two opposing forces are thrust and drag. So thrust is something that pushes you through the air, and drag is the ways in which all of that stuff pushing against the air slows it down by compressing the air that's in front of it. And so in order to fly, you need to create lift. And we do this with a wing, typically. If you see an airplane, it has either two or four or sometimes six wings if you go back to the Red Baron.
Yes.
And each of those wings is specially designed to go through the air and create a pressure differential that basically sucks that wing up into the sky.
Right.
Well, on a helicopter, your wings are basically those rotors that are over the top of the helicopter that, you know, rotor head, each one of the blades on it is an individual wing.
Right. Okay.
So each of those blades is spinning very fast, and each one of them is creating lift while it spins. And that's what gets you in the sky, and then you kind of change the tilt on it to move forward or sidewards or backwards. The problem, though, once you get going fast, the blade that is going backwards at some point is going slower than the speed of the aircraft through the air, which means it's no longer creating lift.
Huh.
And that is called retreating blade stall. So helicopters are limited in their airspeed because of this retreating blade stall. But airplanes, certain airplanes, can go a lot faster. So you will never see a helicopter go Mach 1.
No.
Okay. Very good brief explanation of aerodynamics. That was excellent.
Yeah, that was really cool. Okay. So when you're out and you're rescuing the people and so forth, and this kind of goes to the main question that we were going to ask you, the helicopter, does it, I guess it depends on the distance that it is from the land. So if it's close enough, the helicopter can leave from the land and go out and pick it up. But sometimes you have to put helicopters on ships, correct?
Well, the reason that we put helicopters on ships is to give us bigger range for the ships to be able to see and help people that are out in the middle of the ocean. So they'll put us on the back of the ship. They call it deploying. And the ship will get underway and take us to whatever operational area that they want to work in. And then we will get airborne from the ship and we can extend their visibility and their picture of what's going on.
Okay. But while you're on the ship, you have to take off and land again while this thing is moving in the water. How does that work? I've always wondered this. I've seen it a million times, but I've wondered what it's like to actually land on a ship that's not completely stationary, right?
Well, it's pretty fun. I gotta be honest. It's one of my favorite things to do. So assuming that you are a qualified helicopter pilot and you are proficient at hovering and landing, mm-hmm. then the level of difficulty for that depends on the conditions. Ah. So it depends on the size of the landing deck that's on the ship. And it depends on the weather and daylight conditions. So if the ocean is really rough and the boat is moving around a lot, obviously that is a lot more challenging. Oh, yeah. And if it's dark out and you don't have visual reference to the horizon, it is very challenging.
Oh my gosh.
The, yeah. Basically, the way it works, though, is you hover over the deck of the ship and you kind of get a feel for what's going on underneath you. You watch the deck rock and rock and rock.
and then
you time it for the middle of that rock and you shove what's called the collective down. So you just try to get your aircraft. So the ship is typically moving forward. So right. It's driving along. And what that does, if they do it right and they get the winds at a certain angle, what it does is it creates a smooth airstream over the helicopter so you can have a stable hover there.
Oh.
And you just kind of fly along over the ship until you get the timing right for this rocking and rolling that it's doing. And then you jam the collective down and get on the deck at the perfect moment.
Gosh.
And then, just like that.
And then everybody comes rushing in to tie you down. Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Excellent. Okay, so I want to add one additional question to that. As a helicopter pilot, are you trying to land both of your pads at exactly the same time? Or are you trying to get one to touch and then like you see a little light and then you know you're down and you put the other one down?
So my aircraft.
I've never been able to ask that before.
Yeah, well, this is a very important question. My aircraft had three wheels, so two in the back and one on the nose. But it also applies to skidded aircraft. You're talking about skids where you have those two posts on the bottom of a helicopter. You want to get everything on that deck as quickly as possible in synchronization if you can. And the reason for that is a thing called dynamic rollover, where if one part of the aircraft, like one of my wheels or one of those skids, catches on a moving object and then continues. So, for example, if that wheel were to catch on the side of the deck where I'm supposed to be landing and the ship keeps rolling, then my aircraft, the tendency of it is going to want to roll against it. It's a pivot point. It creates a pivot point
for
that. And you're going to flip over. And that's not good. So you don't want to spend any time messing around with a moving ship under you with just one touch point.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm like, maybe it's a good thing I wasn't a helicopter pilot.
You would have been great at it.
This sounds very complicated. So now I'm going to ask the next kind of logical question. Like, first of all, to two-parter, like how high are you hovering off the deck before you make the decision? And what if you decide, yeah, this is not going to work? Can you lift back up and then try again? You know, like they show in the movie, right? Top Gun, where you do the flyby and then you come back and you land the plane properly or whatever.
Yeah. So it depends. The question about how high do we hover over the deck before we land? It depends on how much the ship is moving.
Oh.
So we have operational limits. So we get comfortable in the range that the ship is allowed to roll and pitch in. But, you know, you can't just drop that collective. You can't just drop out of the sky from like 15 or 20 feet because then you'll damage the bottom of the aircraft. So it's a very coordinated movement, but that's basically, it depends on how much the ship is moving. If I'm on land and I want to hover to land, I can ease it down to the point that you don't even know we landed because I went slowly. On a ship, it's not like that. It's a lot more aggressive. And then what was your other question was whether you can get away from the ship if things aren't working out. Absolutely. As long as you have the power and the fuel, you can always pull in collective and slide off to the side of the ship like you were doing a normal takeoff. And we would call that a wave off.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. How many times did you land on a boat out in the water?
Oh my gosh. Oh,
you should have given me that question beforehand so I could count them in my logbook. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times.
Yeah. Okay. So you said it's tough to operate in the dark, but you do, right? Like if you find out that someone's stranded on a boat in the middle of the night, you do go out or do you wait until it's light?
Oh, all of my answers are, it depends.
All right, moving on.
No, so we do, obviously, we train to be able to operate at night, obviously, and in various conditions of night. So we have tools that we sometimes practice with and without called night vision goggles. Night vision goggles are these cool little things that basically when you look through them, it looks like you're looking through a couple of toilet paper tubes that are all green and the whole world turns shades of green, but they need light to work. They need just a tiny bit of light. It could just be a clear night with the stars in the sky, but a moon is so much better. Ah, so we love a full moon night. It's like daylight out there to us. Seriously, you can see everything. But if you get an overcast night where there's all clouds and no moon, it's very challenging because, you know, pilots practice operating in two ways, with visual conditions where they can see everything outside and around them, and instrument conditions, like if we were flying in the clouds, where we refer to all of the gauges that are in dials and everything that tell us which way is up and tell us how fast we're going. So we practice both of those things. And to be honest, we practice going into a hover and we can even descend all the way to the deck if we had to on land on instruments. But that's because the ground isn't moving.
Right.
When you have a ship in front of you that's wobbling around and you don't have any reference to the horizon to kind of get your mental gyro caged, it can really mess you up as a pilot. It can be very dangerous.
Okay.
But we practice all of it.
All right. That's a very good thing to practice.
Yes.
So I want to sort of take a little bit of a step back. You are a female Coast Guard helicopter rescue pilot. Are you one of just a couple? Are there a lot of them? Again, I have a 10-year-old daughter, and in the intro, I mentioned that you have a super cool, exciting life, and we're talking about some of it right now. Did you have a lot of other female Coast Guard pilots around you?
No, I didn't. So the Coast Guard, one of the fun things that I did while I was in the Coast Guard was I got to manage all the pilots as a human resources manager. And so I had a very clear understanding of the percentage of women. Women only make up 8% of pilots in the Coast Guard. And across aviation worldwide, they're 5-7%. And, you know, women, aviation's been around for about 120 years. And women have been flying most of that time, and the percentage hasn't changed much. And so I'm really excited to do anything that I can to help improve those numbers.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. So is there a reason why? Do you think it's because women don't have the same opportunities, or do you think it's because women just aren't choosing to become pilots?
Oh, that's such a good question. And every woman in aviation wants to know. We, of course, we love it. We're doing it. And so we don't understand, but we do, you know, there are anecdotes and assumptions about the various reasons that there aren't more. Maybe young people aren't exposed to the idea. So that's the angle that I'm working, because I'm writing for young adults books about that feature girls who are introduced to aviation, who learn how to fly. And I want them to have examples so that they know that it's a possibility.
Okay. So taking that question the next step farther, which, and we will get to your books, but beyond just reading stories of other female aviators, are there other ways that girls can get interested in flying? I'm a science and space teacher, and, you know, flying is one of those things where the kids would love to do it. Like when we're doing space camp or something, the kids would love to do the zero G or the flying things, but that stuff is really hard to simulate with the kids and the young adults. Are there other ways that we can get them interested?
So there are lots of outreach organizations. We have an organization called the 99s, which is the First Women Pilots Association, and I'll explain that name later.
Yeah. Okay.
But they do outreach events. For example, here in South Florida, I volunteer with the Gold Coast 99s, and we host a Girl Scout Day.
Oh,
and
nice.
And we also hosted a, they call it a Let's Fly Now Day. And so young women and men are invited to come out, and people who own their private planes bring them in, and they take people up for what's called a discovery flight.
Wow.
The other awesome. Organization that does that is the Experimental Aircraft Association, have the Young Eagles, and that's open to every boy, girl, whoever wants to join. And they also have these discovery flight days at various airports. You're right, simulating flying itself may be a challenge, but just getting them interested, taking them out to the airport or taking them to an aviation museum, there are hundreds of those around the country.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're a member of a Girl Scout, Boy Scout troop or another organization, you can ask your leaders to organize something by reaching out to one of these outreach groups, the EAA, the 99s, Women in Aviation International is another one. There are many. And see if they can put something together to give you some exposure to all of the fun things that we do in aviation.
So can you tell us, what is the name of the big EAA festival or whatever that they have every year? Because I was there as a kid, like a long time ago, because I grew up in Illinois. But my husband went several times and his uncle flew a plane in it.
Super yeah, fun.
Right? Like, because he had rebuilt some kind of old plane. And so he got to fly in it.
It is called EAA Air Venture, but everybody knows it as Oshkosh. It is the
yes.
biggest air show in
yes.
the United States,
yes.
and it happens in July.
Yep. Yeah. And it's amazing to see. And, you know, of course, I'm most familiar since I went to the Naval Academy with the Blue Angels. And here in Jacksonville, we have an air show every year. Sometimes it's at the beach. And if it's at the beach, which is closer to where I live, they literally fly over my house. It's
yeah.
the coolest thing ever. Not just the Blue Angels, but there's all of the planes. We are on the path that the planes fly. And then sometimes it's over at the other Navy base further up. But so they don't fly over here.
I love air shows. It's
yeah.
one of my favorite things to do. And I yeah. just got back last month from Oregon's first all women air show. It was called She Flies.
Yay!
All of the performers, all of the air bosses and safety officers, everyone who was there on an aircraft was a woman. We had military aircraft, civilian aircraft. It
wow.
was so awesome.
Very
and
cool.
The thing I loved the best about it was everywhere I looked, there were women in flight suits and uniforms kneeling down to get to eye level with the little girls who were there.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And that just made me so happy. Yep.
Wonderful.
Awesome.
Well, I'll add my Colorado version of making you happy. I live just south of the Air Force Academy grounds mm-hmm. in Colorado
oh, yeah.
Springs. So every May, I have an Air Force Thunderbirds week worth of practicing. Their graduation practice happened
yep.
right over my house.
Super cool.
And I live right below where the cadets do their glider training.
Oh, that's so cool too.
So we get to see them doing glider thermals all the time. But
really?
My daughter actually it was just a couple of weeks ago. As of right now, we would hear the Thunderbirds coming. My daughter and I would run outside with our phones and our eyes and see who could find them first in the sky and
yeah.
how many were up there for that loop. It's a whole lot of fun.
That's so great.
And that's one of the reasons why we have people like you on the show too, is that we hope to expose our listeners to a lot of the stuff, you know, that women are doing in aviation and let them know that, you know, girls can do this too, right?
Yeah, and we're not just pilots. I want to make sure that I mention that. We have, you know, you can be a mechanic, you can be an air crew on an aircraft, you can be an engineer and design aircraft. So there are just so many ways that you can get involved in aviation with whatever interests you.
So we can't let you go before you talk about, you mentioned it before, that you're writing stories for young adults. Can you tell us about what you're writing?
Well, I have two novels in progress. One of them is, I hope, very close to finding a way to get published. And it is a book. It's a book about, in a civilian context, a girl who meets a friend who is a pilot. She's, my main character is 16 years old, and she meets this girl who's 17 and who is a pilot. And that girl's mom is an air show performer. And so they go off and have lots of adventures. My girl's not sure about aviation. She's not sure if it's right for her. So she has to get exposed to it and see what she thinks. I bet you can guess how it comes out.
I would imagine. But I want to actually go back to the beginning too. So how did you start doing all this? Like, were you one of those kids whose parents took them to the air shows when they were little? Like, how did you get into flying planes and helicopters?
I wanted to be an astronaut when I was 5.
Yay! And, me too.
Okay.
And then I somehow discovered, and I don't even remember how, that back then, anyway, it has changed a lot.
Yeah.
But back then, in order to be an astronaut, you had to be a pilot first. Mm. And then for some reason, you know, pilot just became my singular focus. And my parents were not pilots. Nobody in my family was in aviation. But they were encouraging and they exposed me as much as they could with their connections or whatever, which wasn't much. But I went to a special high school. It was the magnet school for aviation.
Oh,
so that was really cool. And I had a middle school that had an aerospace class, so I was able to do that. And then I kind of took some detours as a teenager and ended up joining the Coast Guard. And it took me a few years. I did some other things first, but then finally went to officer school and asked to go to flight school and got to fulfill my dream at 25.
That's so fabulous.
Nice. And then 28 years later, you decided to finish that career.
Yeah.
Very cool. And now you get to do it for recreation.
That's right. I have a huge bucket list of things that I want to do.
Well, I think that's fabulous. Okay. So we are at the point in the show where we like to ask you to give our listeners a challenge. So I'm very curious to hear what your challenge is going to be, Liz.
Okay. So, you know, most people that you talk to who don't have any relationship with aviation, when you ask them about a woman pilot, they mention Amelia Earhart.
Yep.
Right.
She had a lot of publicity. Amelia was amazing for aviation and for women in aviation. Remember earlier I mentioned the 99s?
Yes.
The 99s is the first women's pilots group. It was formed in 1929, and Amelia was the first president of it, and it was called the 99s because there were 99 women who joined, which means that there are 98 other women that we don't hear about. So my challenge to all of you is to go find out about one of the other 99 women who were originally in that group back in 1929 and see what you can find out about her.
Oh my gosh, I want to do that. I think that sounds so cool, right?
Jen, I think we both have homework now.
I think
we can't pick the same one though.
But this is going to be so fun, right?
I think you have plenty to choose from.
Yeah, I think this would be so fun. Well, speaking of fun, this has been an amazing episode. I have learned tons about flying and helicopters and everything. Thank you so much for being on Solve It for Kids, Liz.
Thank you for having me. And I just want to say, you know, I host the Aviatrix Book Review website that has hundreds of books featuring women in aviation for all ages and all genres. And it's really just a resource for you to find those books. So you can go browse the young Aviatrix books, find things that you want to get from the bookstore or library, or you can order them online.
Sounds great.
Excellent.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for adding that. Thanks for being on Solve It for Kids.
Boy, what an exciting episode. I'm still not sure I'd be willing to try landing a helicopter on a ship, but it sure does sound exciting. What do you think, Jen?
I mean, yeah, I've been on an aircraft carrier. I might land a helicopter on an aircraft carrier, but on one of those little, small Coast Guard ships, I don't know. That might make me, especially think about it as it moves, right? I mean,
yes,
I think it's
as
what
it
she
moves,
does is so cool. That's so cool.
Absolutely. And the fact that she has taken all of her flying experience and expertise and started to translate it out into stories for young adults to read and sharing women in aviation well beyond, just like her challenge says, well beyond the one female aviator that everybody
that
knows, Amelia Earhart. And to do this challenge, man, if we have listeners in San Diego, I just visited the San Diego Air and Space Museum.
Oh, yeah.
And they have an entire section of women aviators and all sorts of stories. So, listeners, there are lots out there to help you fulfill this challenge.
Exactly. Oh, it's so much fun. And I hope some of you do the challenge and then share it with us on our social media. We are at KidSolve at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And of course, we will have an amazing page on our website, solveitforkids.com, all about Liz. And you can see pictures of just how big or small you think this Coast Guard ship is that her helicopter lands on. So make sure you check that out as well.
This is going to be a popular episode. Until the next episode, keep looking up for women aviators, and you'll hear Jen and Jeff next time on
Solve It for Kids.